This podcast is proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.
Hi, I'm Gordon Muller. I'm the guru in the Doc and Guru podcast. Thanks for being with us. For those of you who don't know me, I've spent over 40 years in the media industry in South Africa and pretty much made it my home, my life, my passion. I have other passions, unfortunately, for my sins. I'm an Arsenal supporter and a Sharks supporter, so we're going to do pretty much everything on the show as it pertains to media, marketing, and money, but we don't take jokes about Arsenal or the Sharks.
I'm Doug Mateus, the doc on the show. And again, for those of you who don't know me, I spent 30 years in various companies in South Africa running different marketing functions. And the last job I had, I was privileged enough to work with a team that took the brand to the fastest growing brand in South Africa in 2018 with a 47% year-on-year growth. So that was a great achievement for the team, and I'm really proud of that. From a personal point of view, I do a little bit of cycling and also snow skiing, so we quite enjoy that. But again, today's discussion is around all things marketing and media.
Yep, that's right, Doc. All things marketing and media. No subject too big, no topic too small, no subject too hot to handle. Please get in touch with us on our Facebook page, follow us, like us, whatever it takes. We would love you to be involved with the show, and we really want to make it as inclusive and as energetic as I know this industry is capable of.
Gordon, how's it going?
Excellent. I'm really looking forward to this morning's discussion. We're moving into the space that I'm more comfortable with. We're talking media stuff now, Doc, yeah. Which is always makes me happy. So well done for recruiting our guest this morning. But I'm going to leave that to you for the intros.
Thanks. Thanks, Gordon. Yeah. Today we've got Wesley Hillier, a digital consultant, and Wes is going to chat to us, Gordon, about a whole lot of stuff. I mean, very interesting stuff around marketing, digital, and that whole merger of that. So Wes, thanks for your time. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Doug. Hi, Gordon. Good to be here.
Yeah, cool. And may I just say as well that, you know, we do take other schools. This is turning into the Jeppy show because I understand Wes is a Jeppy boy. We've had Ernest and Corsi, so we won't discriminate against the Cares boys out there. If you've got any Cares guys, we'll take those as well.
Well, I mean, just, you know, a few weeks back we had Stilly on. Remember, he was at the same school I was in, Port Elizabeth.
So indeed. There's some good
high schools out there. Yeah. Wes, just straight into it. Let's just chat. I mean, you know, the buzzword, and I guess it's still crazy for me that we're still talking digital marketing when, you know, everything in the world is digital. You know, sometimes when I get frustrated when I can't work on my remote, I still wish we were in an analog world and things were separate, but, you know, wishing's only going to get you so far. Wes, let's just talk about the big takeouts, the difference between, say, digital marketing and traditional, and why you think the one is different or maybe better than the other one.
I think that's a very good point, Doug. People often say X is digital and Y isn't digital. And they'll have a digital marketing team and that can deal with digital and everything else deals with non-digital. But the problem is everything is omnichannel, really. It used to be this golden word that everyone used, this magical, mythical word. But now everything is. I mean, a retailer, for example, should realize that a customer came in store. They should realize whether it's them connecting to their Wi-Fi network or geolocation or a certain digital touch point that customer didn't buy the product. Why didn't they buy it? How did they retarget that customer on, say, social media and bring them back into store? So what is digital and what isn't? It's the lines are blurred and it's all one thing. So it's often people don't understand that and they think let's just build a silo and put this digital silo in the corner. We'll give it budget and we'll think that will work. It's not the case at all.
Yeah, the problem is, and you're absolutely right, that the silos are things that have been put in place by the industry rather than by consumers. So, you know, we've got digital agencies and creative agencies and media agencies all separately trying to target one third of a holistic consumer out there. And it's insane. The business model is hopelessly broken in terms of trying to keep up with the reality of digital.
And I think, you know, Gordon, I mean, just, you know, going back In many status meetings I'd sat in, and I'd get frustrated because digital, and I think I've mentioned this in the previous podcast, would often be the third or the fourth separate line item on the agenda. You know what I mean? Starting off with your big above-the-line creative and then going down. And by that stage, a lot of people have lost interest in the room. And I can't remember the number of times I started shouting at people saying, can you do me a favor and stick digital first so we can actually – and stop with this bullshit digital-led stuff that you tell me, but you actually don't even – you don't even get your agenda set up correctly. And I think that's the issue, whereas – and I mean, you know, I think – you know, you and I, and chatting offline, would share some of those comments around the fact that sometimes people say one thing, yet revert back to a time of comfort in a time past that really isn't the time for now.
Yeah, very much so. And I mean, you can even look at in the States how some companies are doing it. I've had chats with T-Mobile on how they, for example, they're the third biggest telco in America. The big two dominate the Super Bowl weekend. So all the media goes to Verizon and AT&T. So T-Mobile said, how do we challenge that? So what they actually did, they built a war room, and all they did, they would analyze the trends and where the talk is going on social, and then bring it back to every other channel in real time on Super Bowl weekend. So their CEO would get involved, and he would talk about views, and I mean, obviously, you know, it's quite competitive, that he would literally mock the campaigns of the big challengers. And it became a tradition that people started listening and following T-Mobile just to see what they would say on Super Bowl weekend about the football. And it's a very traditional telco, but it's this loved but bright pink brand. So working in South Sea, we would do a lot of stuff where we would say, how do we use this orange brand, and how do we make it a love brand similar to T-Mobile, and stuff like Miss SA and so forth were aligned really nicely, and influencer marketing was a key. We would say, how do we get people to bring anything orange? Like, for example, we had a well-known photographer, and he ran through Joburg CBD with flares, and orange flares through Joburg CBD, and we posted that across social media. It had nothing to do with Salsi as a brand. It was just that association of orange flares with a very famous photographer in Joburg CBD. But suddenly this on digital almost led to the real world, where people think Salsi is quite a cool brand, actually. It's just, there's stuff like that. And all comes from that T-Mobile thinking, where they merge the worlds and use digital as their tool to combat guys with far bigger budgets.
Yeah, you have to guard against other, you know, or you need to differentiate between digital as a platform for delivery versus a conceptual idea. So on the issue of color, 20 years ago working on MTN, we wanted to own the color yellow, which was the brand color, and we did all that sort of thing. We painted the walkways at airports. All the airports around the country were painted yellow in the reception areas. We even changed the lights, highlighting Sandton City, which was the focal point in those days, and you know, we made those lights yellow. So that kind of concept has always been around, but obviously you can just amplify the thing a hell of a lot more now.
Yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of the, I mean, Wes, what you're talking about is, and again, Gordon, you know, we've spoken a challenger brand thinking around that of staying hungry, you know, looking for those small wins and amplifying those small wins. Not talking sport from, you know, Super Bowl Sunday all the way through. And I mean, you and I are big fans of, and as Gordon is, many other people. We had Robbie Hunter here a few weeks ago talking cycling at the heart of the Tour de France. I know you know Robbie, and you were at school with Daryl Impey and so on. Let's just talk not about cycling, but about the technology entities brought into cycling, and then also F1, you know. Let's talk about how they, through Liberty Group, when they acquired F1, they had a whole change of mindset in bringing the fan closer to the driver and the sport as a whole.
So that's a massive threat for a lot of sports. I think probably cricket, and particularly long-form cricket, is massively at risk of actually losing their base, losing that engagement. You would see, I mean, that... in America, a good example would be NASCAR, for example. So what cycling and what Formula One have done really well is they've said, how do we use this data and digital, if you want to call it that, if you want to put it in a box, to make it relevant, particularly to a younger audience. So NTT and cycling now, they've literally got trackers. So they've got trackers on every single bicycle, has an NFT tracker under the saddle that connects to a motorbike, which connects to a car, which connects to a helicopter and a plane. And by some kind of magic, this data comes back to a data center controlled by NTT, and they can build predictions about who's going to win what race, whose percentage is going up, whose is going down. And one big thing about cycling, there was always a lot of guesswork. You would go, well, so-and-so is up the mountain and more or less it's 30 seconds, but then it shoots to 2 minutes and you don't really know where it is. Now, in real terms, a good example was the recent Tour de France penultimate stage, where in real time, Roglic and Pogacar, you could see exactly what the split was between them. And it actually, I was watching it with non-cycling fans and they could understand it. It was broken down, thanks to the power of data, it was broken down into terms that a non-cycling fan could go, yes, green means person A is ahead and red means they're down. And it was almost like an interactive gamification. Mm-hmm. Similar in Formula One, when Liberty took over, they brought an AWS by Amazon. And they've brought in also data, and there's this incredible analysis now where you can work out the percentage of who's doing what and percentage chance of this guy going two stops and this guy, and they've gamified it. It's all the gamification now. Mm-hmm. So both NTT and AWS, via the use of data and analytics, have brought this gamification to two sports which were very much under threat of becoming irrelevant in a new world where as soon as the sport gets dull, the new age of consumer switches to their second screen, which is their cell phone. Yeah. And now when they switch to their second screen, which is a cell phone, they're actually looking at the Tour de France or the Formula One app.
Yeah, I must say, you know, I enjoy Tour de France, but I'm not an informed viewer. But that scenario you were talking about on the final kind of rollout there was extraordinary, because I could now understand what was going on. It was incredibly exciting. And to Robbie's credit, he called it. He said, right, he's like a week before. He said, you've got to keep an eye on the young riders. They're going to do it.
He did call
and
it.
Man, he did. Yeah. Yeah. Just coming back to the business side of it, you made an interesting separation of two terms. You used data and digital separately. And I wondered to what degree we in marketing are mixing up the two. Where we confuse, you know, a constant stream of data, which is just information, as if it's some sort of digital offering. So, for example, the POE model, you know, paid, owned, earned, for me, I find it remarkable that it's still in place, because it's obsolete. Paid, you know, we kind of reference as traditional media, owned is kind of internet, and then the earned was social media. But now we know around the world, and in South Africa, the figure is 25%, around the world, 50%. We should actually be calling it the POEP model, POEP, because the biggest paid-for component is now social media. So data versus digital, how do we separate these two in our heads as marketers?
So I mean, firstly, I would say data as a term, data in itself is like oil. If you strike oil in the middle of an ocean, but you've got no way to refine that oil and bring it back to land, it's actually useless. It's often I've worked with companies and they've got, I mean, there's many industries you could think of that have infinite amounts of data, but they don't know how to use that first party data. So it's taking that data, analyzing it into almost refined oil, if you want to call it that, and analyzing it into something tangible. What do you want to achieve with this data? Why has this guy stopped coming into Woolworths? Let's retarget him. He used to walk into a physical Woolworths store 3 times a week and he hasn't been back for 2 months. Let's use data to figure out why he's not in store. And two, let's use social media to target him, to bring him back in store. So digital is, I mean, it's a term I don't really like to use, because I think digital is everything. I mean, a traditional retailer is digital. If it's not digital, they're going to be out of business at some point soon. So I think digital is too broad a term, but data, I think the split to make is data and smart data or analyzed data.
Yes, that resonates with me. I'd buy that, John.
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, just thinking about what you're saying, Wes, about companies aren't in digital. I mean, you know, the sad Edcon case is well known and well publicized. And I mean, I was reading, and I don't, you know, sometimes people are misquoted, and sometimes it's done purposely to sell, I want to say newspapers, but clicks on a page these days. Grant Patterson at that stage was quoted after the fallout and the Edcon of saying, you know, we've realized we're actually not good at selling online. Now, you know, I looked at that statement and I said, geez, I hope he was misquoted, because I can't believe that a CEO of that type of group would make that kind of comment. I mean, it's obvious you guys weren't good at online. I mean, I can tell you just by going on and trying to buy something, you know what I mean? And I mean, a few months ago, before the whole travel ban, I was in New York walking around pre-COVID. I mean, we didn't know the word. And I was walking with my wife on all the avenues, 5th and Lexington and 7th and like whatever, you know what I mean? And you go through these blocks of real estate, but a whole block of Macy's, then opposite is Bloomingdale's, and then it's Saks Fifth Avenue and Nordstrom. I mean, these are great old school retailers, and whereas you know I like the Nordstrom philosophy and customer centricity and all those things, and there's a great place for it. But I, you know, and the US is far advanced in terms of online and all its derivatives. And I said to my wife, you know, going up 8 floors of escalators to a row of men's suits and then it's swimming costumes. And I said to her, but I don't know how this model works. How can these guys afford the real estate in New York City? Now, the interesting thing would be post-COVID, as we're getting out of this thing, hopefully, I'd be very curious to see their comments around accelerating that stuff and whether you still need it. You know, it's a great place to go, but it's almost like a museum these days.
You're listening to The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media.
Yeah, very much so. And I mean, one company in the States that I'll give credit, and I mean, there's a few in South Africa as well. But I mean, Walmart, for example, they've seen the challenge of Amazon and they're reacting and quite proactively. So this term digital, it's in everything they do. Recently, TikTok is the big buzzword, and Oracle and Walmart have become two of the companies buying stock in TikTok. And you think, why would a very traditional retailer want stock in a, for all intents and purposes, a kid's platform? But they've looked at it and they've thought the future of commerce is social commerce. So if we own, if we have equity in this incredible platform where the future generation of Americans is sitting, imagine what we can do connecting social media to our traditional stores. And I mean, who knows where that goes? It's exciting, but it could go anywhere, whether it's selling on TikTok or whether it's just bringing those two verticals together. So that's an incredible opportunity. I mean, even guys like Checkers, for example, some of the stuff they're doing in South Africa is very forward thinking. So a lot of guys are doing a really good job at it.
Yeah, look, I'm a Walmart man. It's the only time I ever go to a store anywhere in the world where I can go to the small, skinny guy section. You know, it works perfectly for me. But, you know, coming back to, you know, doing digital rather than being in this whole, what's the word you use, smart digital?
I think Analyze data,
whatever. So for me, the penny drop, and I read Seth Godin, and I'm talking a good couple of years back, talking about the meatball sundae. So a sundae, not the day of the week, but the ice cream. So when you have a sundae and it tastes like rubbish, you know, have a look at it, because all that's happened is that the first half of your ice cream sundae is meatballs and somebody's lobbed a bit of ice cream on top. That he was talking about integration. You can't do digital anymore. It's just silly. You either integrate it into every aspect of your business, distribution, invoice, the whole remarketing thing. I mean, it's crazy to think about it as something you do as opposed to something you are.
Yeah, and I think one of the best recent examples is Toys R Us in the States, which obviously went bankrupt. And there's a few reasons for it. I mean, to use this broad term, digital, they very much missed digital altogether. Then they said, let's panic and just throw all of our inventory onto Amazon. So they gave away that whole part of their journey. And I mean, the key to Toys R Us is their brand. So when you join Amazon, you give away a lot of your brand. And the final death knell was actually Walmart, because at Walmart in the end said, well, let's just bring customers in store. We'll basically give away toys at break even or cost or loss leaders just to keep the moms happy and shopping, and the guys looking at skinny clothes, and that was the death knell for them. So digital wasn't the full issue, but it was a major part, and in the end they just panicked and got it completely wrong.
So let's come back to the remarketing thing. I mean, there's been a sort of a growing meme of webinars around the issue of what they're calling the post-cookie landscape. So with Poppy Act and all that kind of personal data protection, what's the next phase? I mean, if cookies are eliminated and or I'm so incentivized not to actually have one, how do you go about the remarketing thing in the future?
So it does obviously make life a lot more difficult, particularly the third-party cookies. From the perspective of Facebook, it won't affect Facebook as much. I mean, they've got so much data on customers. I use Facebook as in a term for all of the big social media giants. So all of the big social media giants have so much data on customers that they will continue to target them. So if you work in as a marketer, you working with Facebook, Twitter, pick your platform, you will still be able to target your customers. They've got that third-party data with or without. Obviously, as Poppy and GDPR comes in, they will squeeze a lot of those easy flows of customer data, but they will still have that data to do extreme targeting. But I think who will get hit is almost the third parties, the third party sellers. They will get squeezed by it, which is a bit sad when Apple, for example, start clamping down. It's not so much Facebook who will get harmed. It's actually more the smaller sellers who resell their inventory. But yeah, I mean, even on Facebook themselves, it's to show you how much data. Often people come and they've got this incorrect assumption. I don't know if you've heard about it, about my phone is listening to me, or Facebook are listening to me on my phone. And I mean, there's a few reasons why. I mean, I could be wrong, but I would be willing to put money down that that's not the case. I mean, the first is Congress in America would clamp down like you've never seen if that was the fact. It would be very illegal. Secondly, the processing power to do that would just be crazy. But third and most importantly, Facebook and co. don't actually need to listen to your phone. They've got so much data on your actions. I mean, if anyone's watched The Social Dilemma, you would know, and if you haven't, it's probably something worth having a watch. But these platforms have so much data. They know what you're going to do. They know why you're not going to pick up that pair of Reebok, and you are going to pick up that pair of Nike, because they've seen triggers. So even if you bring down, to your point, even if you bring down that data through cookies and so forth, they've still farmed so much data from actions. When you click the like button, yes, for this, or when you hover longer over this photo, they realize it's more relative. So that, long story short, there's so many trigger points in social media and digital platforms. They don't actually, in effect, they don't really need, the guys that will struggle will be traditionalists who have a traditional website that only has cookies as its input. Yeah.
So when it comes to, you know, the sort of analogy of, you know, rewarding the dog with a bone every time he rolls over, I mean, we are making ourselves, and we're talking about that Netflix documentary which you raised, The Social Dilemma. To what degree am I just, you're creating a scenario where my bad behavior is rewarded by even worse behavior? And during COVID, for instance, and a good example, let's be current, a week or two back, we had the whole cynical thing. So, I mean, I go for a walk every day, and it's my kind of quiet time, and I get my head sorted out. And I went for a walk the other day, but I made the mistake of watching the cynical thing. So I went for a walk, and I was angry, Doug. I was angry with the dogs that were barking. I was angry with the litter. I was angry with the potholes. And instead of coming back relaxed and chilled after 2 hours on the road, I came back like angry. Yeah. So to what degree do we open ourselves up for this? I mean, if I'm following groups that are negative, the algorithms are going to keep reinforcing this unhappy state of affairs. I mean, am I making myself my own victim?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's this whole confirmation bias as well. So you will look at something that confirms what you believe. So you get stuck into this loop. And before you know it, you're only following people that have the extreme views that you follow, and you yourself have gone from someone who's perhaps sitting on the border to more extreme in either direction. And it's the other problem about social media. It looks for engagement. These platforms are built to amplify engagement. So that's often why fake news spreads, because fake news is it's sensationalized, and you think that will spread like wildfire because it's engaging, it's getting people's attention. So these algorithms, which are built to get engagement, to keep your eyeballs on that platform. Everything that happens, it's to keep your eyeballs on a digital platform. I mean, to digress slightly, the Netflix CEO, Reed Hastings, recently said that other media platforms aren't his competition. Sleep is his competition. And you think it's funny, but it's actually true. And all these social media platforms and Netflix, they're trying to edge, say, half an hour out of your sleep pattern to keep your eyeballs on that platform, to keep their business model ticking. And what makes that platform tick? It's extreme cynical, for example, on both sides, whether you're on the left or the right, the extreme sides are what got people clicking on platforms, and the algorithms were punting those to people like yourself who isn't actually really even interested in extremities. You just want to go for a nice walk, but you've been pulled into this sort of engagement circle or bubble. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, just yeah, absolutely, Wes, and I, you know, and again, one's got to be cautious and careful of those things. And it's not just for adults, but certainly kids. You know, look at a lot of the behavior around kids and online bullying. And I think, Gordon, maybe I can't remember whether we did chat a little bit about that in the past. I mean, Emma Sadler has done a lot of work as a social media lawyer around, you know, being careful and being cognizant of what you're posting out there and getting your privacy settings and all the rest of it right. And I just feel, you know, that, I don't know if I've missed it, but I don't think companies, in my view, are doing enough. You know, I want to see more of those old school don't drink and drive billboards of breweries and Heineken, and that I still see that on the booze sector. But I don't see enough And when I say billboards, I don't literally mean a physical billboard, but it's an online thing or whatever. It's a question of saying, be careful, you know, take extra care. These are the pitfalls, etc. Wes, I don't know if you want to add something on that.
Doug, I think that's such a great point. I mean, it's a big, big worry of mine, even with young kids in my family and so forth. If we as adults can't control this, what chance do kids have? For example, I mean, they get pulled into this, the psychology that's used to build social media platforms is the same psychology used on slot machines. It's that whole what comes next. That, hey, look at Mrs. Smith. She's about to leave the casino. Let's hit her with what 2.5 cherries and we know we'll keep her for an extra hour. So let's pop up a notification or a photo of, and the social dilemma actually goes into this, to do it much better justice than myself, but it's the exact same psychology. So you think, what chance does a kid have who's in effect getting addicted to this? The other side of it is bullying. You think when we were young, you'd get bullied, but at 1, 2 o'clock, you'd hop on your bicycle, you'd cycle home, and that's the end of bullying until 9 the next morning, and you've had a pep talk and you're good to go the next day. Now bullying carries on. They've got you in WhatsApp groups, TikTok groups, a lot of groups that parents don't understand, platforms on the phone that the parents don't understand, and 24/7. And it's actually becoming a pandemic of itself, that cyberbullying is a massive, massive issue. And as well as, I mean, the issues you mentioned, that, I mean, kids are basically getting addicted to digital platforms, and you think you do need companies to say, listen, we make money from digital, we want you on our digital platform on our smartphone, but hey, you need to limit your time. And I guess on a global scale, Apple have done some good work there, but from a South African scale, I mean, maybe that's a big opportunity. Yeah,
look, and I think, you know, not to say that that kind of depressed mindset doesn't happen in traditional media, it does. We've seen again recently 702 repositioning the station, and if you look at, you know, their kind of releases, what they came to the realization was that people want the news. Nobody wants their heads buried in the ground, but they want at least some kind of positive uplift, you know, from the whole thing. And so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out for 702. But I think there's an inherent realization that you can't live on, you know, on the dark side of the street all the time. You've got to have a bit of light occasionally. Wesley, quick question before I lob it back to the doc.
Yeah.
You operate as a consultant. I mean, I've done that for 20 years as well, so I know how hard it can be talking about the dark side of the street. How do folks get hold of you if they want to pick up the discussion with you directly?
Yeah, so probably my email, wesley@mothinnovate.com, or otherwise I'm very active on Twitter. So Wes Hillier, or at Wes Hillier, you can go and read my ramblings and views there on a daily basis. I'll try and keep them positive.
There we go.
Speaking of positive though, Wes, I mean, you were telling me a while ago you met with an AI company in Paris who's doing some innovative stuff around vineyards and stuff. And then let's just chat, once you've spoken about that, a little bit about IBM Watson and telemedicine and so some of the positive stuff that's coming out of the space.
Yeah, so two really game-changing scenarios that I saw. One is an AI company that works with the vineyards, as you said, in all over Europe. They literally send drones over these vineyards, and it scans the soil, and it picks up the contents of the soil and what needs to be added, as well as the water content. And thereafter, the machinery, which is also robotics driven by the AI, it's informed by the data, comes over, it adds nutrients. I'm probably not doing justice to the agriculture industry, so sorry to anyone who's in agriculture, but it adds nutrients, adds water. There's no far less water wastage, and the plants grow, well, the grapes grow, and apparently your wine's better. So incredible stuff like that. On the IBM Watson, it's an incredible platform that's doing a lot of work across a lot of verticals. So one of them is healthcare. And what IBM have done is that they've got this healthcare platform. They've ingested enough data. They said it would take 1.8 million years for a doctor to learn all of this, to ingest all the data that IBM Watson has. And it can diagnose cancer patients. So literally a cancer patient will come in. They'll do the tests, the blood tests, so forth. They will cross-reference it against this data. IBM Watson, within 10 minutes, if you want to call it, the AI will come out with its results and say, this is the treatment, this is the doses, and this is how this patient needs to be treated. Ultimately, in the long term, they said their big view is to actually do the tests via a cell phone in, say, remote Africa. So scan X, Y, and Z into these details. They will diagnose it remotely, do the diagnosis remotely, and send out a drone with medication to rural rural Africa, and you think like that's, those are some extreme examples, but it's, that's the upside. There's so much good that can come out of digital. I think it's, we just need to keep it on a bit of a tightrope at times and understand it, stay informed. I think that's the big thing. Yeah.
And I think just, I mean, while we're chatting, we chatted just now about Walmart and Edcon locally in retail. I mean, you were also telling me about, it's aerial photographs of motor cars, car parks, etc., and the predictive analytics that come out of that in terms of earnings and whether you're going to make it or miss it.
Yeah, so that's a big trend in the States. So for the satellites actually are scanning retail car parks. So for example, if you want to know whether to buy or sell Walmart stock, you will get hold of this analytics company. Their satellites have been taking pictures daily for the last quarter. They will scan that quarter, cross-reference it against, say, last year's quarter and tell you whether there were more or less cars in the car park of, say, that whatever the 20 busiest Walmarts, and they will tell, they'll be able to tell you whether their earnings will be up or down. So this is actually massive with hedge funds. Hedge funds will buy this data, and I've heard people actually call it, they call it legal insider trading, because it's legal, but I mean, for all intents and purposes, it's a fine line. So these hedge funds will know that, hey, Walmart had less cars in 2020. Let's sell or short the stock.
It's quite extraordinary, really. But just coming back to the issue of Watson, I would like to challenge Watson to decipher in less than 1.8 million years the pattern and remarkable recovery of Donald Trump after COVID virus in 48 hours. I don't think Watson can figure that one out. The drone thing for me is fascinating, although it seems we haven't really taken off on drone deliveries yet. I mean, I also had this kind of vision of drone deliveries of alcohol during COVID. I mean, you could just sit at home and call for the drone when you were a bit down on the medicinal wine. But, Doc, I'm going to leave it to you. Wesley, that was really interesting. Thank you so much for the time. And it's great to see, with respect, and I say this, propeller heads like yourself have kind of, in my mind, isolated themselves from the reality of marketing. It's encouraging to see that young digital insights generators are bringing it back into the space, Doug, that we need it to be, which is marketing and, in my case, media. So really interesting. I enjoyed the practical applications and insights from that. So thanks for coming. Much appreciated.
Thanks, Gordon. Thanks, Doug.
Yeah, I think, Gordon, that's exactly right. It's like anything in life, It's a lot of consultants, and I mean, you and I are doing it, and Wes, and sometimes, you've got to check yourself. Sometimes consultants know 100 ways to do something, but have never actually done it themselves. They can tell someone else what they're doing wrong, but the challenge is, well, why don't you just do it, seeing that you're so clever? And I think I always look at myself and I say, can you do it? And I think that's great, Wes. That's not just the theory and the bump, and we can all read up and sound, clever and have a few words that we can throw around a dinner party, but it's the actual application. And again, as the flip side of that, Gordon, is to marketers who perhaps are, I want to say, lazy or traditional, who don't work through the data. I've also sat through teams through the years, and I've made the point quite a few times now, hopefully the next generation's not like that, that they actually take the good out of the data. You have to be disciplined to work through the stuff, whether it's, it's called a business scientist or whatever the term is. You go through the data that you can actually get an end result, and the end result is some sort of sale, market share, growth, change of behavior, change of media, something. It's not for itself, not in itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And attribution modeling, which is, I think where the discussion has got to now, the debate about whether you should or you shouldn't have a mix of traditional and digital media is long over. It really is the finessing of the ratios that it's all about now, because the discussion around whether they should or shouldn't be silos for me is long gone.
Great. Good. Wes, thanks very much for your time. And again, as we've always say on the show, get involved. Wes has given you his email. He's given you his social handles. Get involved. Be part of the discussion. Chat with Wes. Find out. I mean, he's not just a bright guy, but a bright guy who's got good applications and use for all of his knowledge. So again, Wes, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks very much, gents. Cheers.
And so that was another episode of The Doc and the Guru. Please don't forget to get hold of us on Facebook, like us, follow us, subscribe to the podcast. And then from my side, you can get hold of me on LinkedIn, Dr. Doug Mataz. I'm very active and very keen to hear about your views, and certainly will respond, and hopefully we can bring that into the show.
Thanks, Doc. And it's Gordon Miller, the guru, signing off. Thank you for being with us and listening into this podcast today. You can pick up the discussion with me on my Twitter handle, at Mzanzi Media. And I'd love to engage with you on any of the issues that we've taken on the show. And take us at our word. This is really going to be an open forum. There are no subjects that are taboo. And we'd love to have some of the younger, more under-listened, if that's the correct phrase, voices to join us in this discussion. Thanks for your time.
The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.